Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is AJ and Dusty.
All right, listen up. I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're gonna have this season
with AJ McCord.
That beer's getting better, I'll admit that. But you're still weak on the left side.
And Dusty Hera.
And I noticed that he wears those leopard spotted underwear, bikini style, sir.
AJ and Dusty on 1080.
What kind of power you got? I got a question for that. I got two.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. Happy Wednesday to you, the 14th of April, 2021. Dusty Hera, no AJ McCord. Will Darkinson, hello, William.
Hello, Dustin.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Will.
How are you?
Well.
Sounds so official today. You put on your broadcaster voice when you were talking.
Ooh, you want to know what that voice is?
Let's hear it.
Allergies voice.
Oh.
Oh, I'm getting my butt whooped by allergies right now.
You got the nose and eyes, or what's leaking?
No, I get dry, itchy throat, runny nose, and burny, itchy eyes.
Oh, eyes, yeah.
No. That's different. I don't take Zyrtec for that.
That's penicillin.
Hit that with the antibiotics. Wait, what?
Hello?
Anywho's.
Off to a hell of a start today, I'll tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get allergies.
Mm-hmm.
I do not, and my wife does. And the
How
reason,
old are you?
33.
Okay. My allergies started when I turned 30.
Oh.
I had no allergies, and then I turned 30, and they've been peddled to the metal. I now get a shot, and I'm holding off on getting my shot to fight my allergies because it goes all the way through, like, hay fever season. So I got to make it through like the harvest. Dude, it's brutal.
Dude, you sound like a colonial man, like just trying to survive.
Yeah.
The hay fever season.
Brother, it's called living in the burrow. You better not.
Want to hold off on my shot until the locusts have gone by.
Yeah, they didn't have shots then.
No, they didn't.
Yep. But I know a lot of folks are going through it too. So, hey, solidarity sisters out there.
My wife goes through it, and she has gone to the extent now in our bedroom.
Oh.
Yeah, this is about to not get sexy.
Okay.
Of doing a humidifier.
Yeah.
Right? So that thing's just crapping out steam all night.
Right.
And then she also has a...
Sultry. Some would call it sultry.
No, it's not.
No? Okay.
And then she's got the little nose thing.
A breathe right strip.
That's the breathe right
strip.
She's
a linebacker from 1999.
Well, not so much.
Terry Tate, office linebacker.
Not size wise, not attitude wise, not athletically.
Okay.
So, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And she also has this special lip balm that I've started to use that's supposed to keep your lips all moist once they get dry from the allergies. Because she gets the allergies from our cat who's walking around on us all night.
What?
Does that make sense?
No.
Our cat is walking around on us all night.
Uh-huh.
Because it stays up. Because it's a cat.
Because cats are jerks.
That's what they do.
Uh-huh.
And her fur just kind of spreads all over the bed, and then she starts sneezing during the night.
See, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why is your cat in your bedroom then?
Because she wants to be, and I'm not going to hold her back. And if I did, I wouldn't be a very good kitty cat owner.
No. No, you would be. You would be.
Well, you know what the alternative is?
Not having the cat in your room?
No, you shut the door and she screams all night.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what it is, man. You shut that door, she screams and scratches at it all night. She wants to be in where the action is, which is us snoring.
Yeah.
Me farting.
Yeah. The humidifier and Will's farts and the breathe right strips that are opening up the sinuses. Yeah, sounds like a great place. The dark end zone really sounds like a great place to be right
it's
now.
It's literally just.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what our bedroom sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel you, man. Oh, well, man. My wife does.
Wow. Ooh. Yeah, I tried this. This texture saying, go down to the local farmer's market, pick up some local bee pollen. Super healthy, helps desensitize your system to many of the allergens in the air. I have, now the pollen I haven't tried. I tried the local honey, and it's got to be like super local honey. And you like got to take like a teaspoon of that. You got to go down to the farmer's market, and you got to ask, where, hey, where'd you get this honey from?
Yeah, what do you mean super local? Like what separates that from me just going down and... seeing a dude on the street who's like, up. I found this honey.
Yeah. Wait, are you talking like the difference between buying crack and buying honey from a farmer's market? No. What it is like, I can't remember the exact radius, but it's got to be like 5 to 10 miles around like where you live. Like that. Like, yeah, we looked it up on the internet, on the Google. My wife Googled this and she's like we got to ask this question.
It's bee research.
And then they're like, Sherwood. And we were like, is that close enough? Mm. No, it wasn't. So, yeah, it was like you do have to get like super local. The honey didn't work. Maybe the pollen will. I don't know. Looks like I'm heading back to the farmer's market if they're open again.
Well, you want to save some real money. Why don't you just be a beekeeper? Why don't you just raise your own bees? Yeah. Your kids would love that, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you just get in that little suit. You get out there. Get your little tush over to that box and you hold out the honeycomb and you got yourself a bunch of bees. Then you can use their honey.
No, I'm good.
You don't want to do that?
No, I'm good.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. Pretty sure.
You ever been stung?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not afraid of bees.
Oh.
I'm not afraid of bees.
So what's up? You don't want to get a bunch of bees?
No, I just don't want to. I've been stung quite a few times. In my life. And I'll never forget one of the times, like, my dad said it a lot, but he said he was proud of me. Like, one of the first times that really stuck with me was that he was coaching a game for Lewis and Clark College, and they were playing at Pacific, which is where he used to coach. So my dad, it was like I remember, like, leading up to it. I was a small kid. Mm. I was, like, 6. And I remember, like, leading up to it, my dad was kind of, like, I knew how big of the game it was. It was a huge game for him personally. And I remember I was on the sidelines, and I got stung in the neck. Like,
barf.
It hurt so bad. And I remember thinking, like, I can't tell my dad about this. What am I going to do?
My dad's going to be pissed.
And I went to the trainer, and the trainer took care of my neck on the field. Wait.
You went past your dad getting stung by a bee at 6 years old, and you had the wherewithal to go, you know what? I think a trainer can handle this.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive for a 6-year-old.
Yeah. And it was one of those, because I remember like thinking in my head, like, this is a big deal to him. Like, I don't want to be in the way. And so I went to the trainer, they hooked me up, they took care of my bee sting, and my dad didn't find out about it until like after the game. And he's like, I'm so proud of you. Like, I didn't like have a meltdown or anything. I was just like, hey, if I'm going to be here, I better make sure that I take care of this myself.
My boy is self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Get that bee sting treated.
Got that bee sting right on my neck.
I got stung. I've actually only been stung twice. Once was pretty uneventful. It was just on my hand. But the first time was something else. And it was in high school. And it was when I was running across the football field at practice from a drill, and I was running across and a bee flew in my ear hole of my helmet and buzzed around in the little spaces in between my helmet before finally settling on the back of my ear and just friggin' piercing the back of my ear with its stinger. Now, at the time, I was freaking out about it, and I didn't think it was very funny. But then we went back and watched film because they were filming me, and it was actually really funny because it was me jogging across the field. And then, like, all of a sudden, it looks like a ghost just got hold of me and started shaking me. And I'm like, freaking, I'm trying to get my helmet off.
I would pay to see that video.
Yeah. Oh, believe you me, it would be great to get that thing back, but it is me just normal jogging forward. And then all of a sudden, like, there is a friggin' danger zone in my helmet.
Like, there's a lot of things that I think now, like, I look back in my life and I'd be like, if that happened, I'd be internet famous.
Oh,
you'd
yeah.
be internet famous yeah. for that.
Football B guy.
Yeah, football B guy. And then there would be like, you know, 4 years later on the Pac-12 network, they'd be showing like, hey, you may remember this. It was a high school freshman who got a B in his ear. He's yeah. now the fullback at Oregon State.
That's right.
And people would be like, whatever happened to that weirdo? Oh, he ended up playing football at Oregon State? The B in the helmet kid did? That's amazing.
It would be the crappy version of what great. They do, where, like, you know, with Justin Fields, right? Like, every single game he played in college, they would always show some highlights of him, like, playing baseball
yeah.
and playing these other sports, and they're like, multi-sport athlete. This guy is an athletic phenom. Uh-huh. You know, me scoring a touchdown, it would be like, he looked like a complete jackass at practice once. Let's go to this footage right here. You see that bee getting right into his ear hole?
Yeah.
Stung.
Yeah, that would have been you on a kickout block. It would have been like, he kicks out the end. Look at that. He's moving him like that guy's, that defensive end's got a bee in his helmet.
Boom.
Boom. Will darkens.
Boom. Bee goes here. Stings there. Boom. Pops yeah. the helmet up.
There's a lot of great things that would have made you like, you think back if like cell phone cameras were out at all times. Life would have been a living hell, but you would have been internet famous a lot.
You know something, though? It was around in my high school time, but it wasn't about social media. It was more about sharing that kind of stuff with friends. Like, people had their camera phones out, and I say this fully aware that it was 2007, and I was living in Lake Oswego, so people had camera phones at that time. And yeah. So anyway, it wasn't about sharing it on social media. It was catching your friends doing stupid crap and then, like, going to your other separate friend group and then showing them on your cell phone. Or, like, people getting their cameras out and acting like they're the MTV Jackass guys and filming themselves doing stupid prank stuff. And then you'd invite your buddies over on the weekend, and you'd be like, check this mess out. And you'd be like, all right, cool.
Oh, Jackass. What a great show.
Dude, that was not a good time to be a parent. Because
no, I mean
little kids just basically repeat it.
Jackass was
stuff.
When I was in high school, like it started, and there was like one of the like the first episodes of Jackass had like a kid in like or have one of the guys in like a Glencoe Pee Wee football jersey or something. yeah,
for real.
Like in a shopping cart, they put him in like a football uniform and sent him down a hill.
Yeah.
Because was it? Danger, Aaron. He's from McMinnville, right?
Sounds
McMinnville,
right.
Is that where he's from?
Sure. I don't know. I don't know much about them.
That was a hell of a time.
Yeah.
The Johnny Knoxville, man. Then they're coming out with another Jackass movie.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting too.
Some of
because,
those stories are really sad though.
Yeah. And I was about to say, like with Steve-O, like yeah. they made one after he got sober and you could just tell by the way he was getting hit in the nuts and like smacked over the head and like falling off stuff that like he wasn't in on it anymore. Like you gotta be drunk to do that kind of stuff. Like you can't be sober and enjoy doing that or finding any pleasure out of it.
Or be young and
yeah.
stupid.
Yeah. Be 20 years old and recognize like that's probably gonna heal. I'm good.
Yeah.
Like once you pass 30, no dude, you can't do Jackass anymore.
All right. Oh, big question coming in on the fan text line. 503-250-1080 about my bee sting. So did your dad win the game? Yeah. Piles won. Piles won. Yeah. They won that
so
game.
So did dad get what he wanted?
Yeah, or? They won. Yeah. They won. They won. He wouldn't have been proud of me if they would have lost.
Could you imagine the car ride home where he lost and he's pissed off? You're like, oh, yeah, and I got stung by a bee. I don't care. This day is not about you.
Oh, man. All right. 503-250-1080. That'd be the fan text line. Today, 1:30, numbers never lie. Well, we will prove that they do at 1:30 with numbers live.
Let's hope.
What?
That's part of the tease. Okay. Let's hope.
All right, let's hope. What does the training wheels off mean for the Oregon offense? That was said yesterday by Travis Dye. What does that mean? We asked that question to you, and we'll try to answer it coming up. Oh, no. Nay, we will answer it at 1 o'clock.
Oh, good. Yeah, because otherwise, I don't know. Mm. Why would we try to answer it if we just don't have the answer already?
Have you ever had an awkward moment in your life where you definitely should have known a person and had no clue who they were?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a bad Christmas party story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is not going to be surprising, is it?
It's really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's awkward in the sense that it's bad in the sense that it's just really frigging awkward. And it got worse over time, too.
Oh, you didn't put the shovel down. You kept digging.
We'll talk about it.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's,
God bless you, Will.
It's that good.
Yeah. I've had a couple. They're not good. It's never good.
Yeah. What's your go-to for the person you don't know who's saying hi to you, who clearly knows who you are?
Hey, bud.
What's up, fella?
No. No, I won't. I'll just be like, I'm sorry. I'm terrible with names, because I am. So I'll just be like, I don't know. And then when the name doesn't resonate,
you know what my brother does, which I thought,
I don't mind it though, but yeah. I embrace the awkward.
My brother does something pretty, pretty heroic. Like it's pretty out there.
Yeah. What does he do?
Hey, it's you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa,
turn it.
That's quite a statement.
Turn
yeah,
it on him.
Cause usually it's like, hey dude, or hey, what's up, man? But he just goes, hey, it's you. What's going on?
I mean,
it just deflates it completely because the person's like, you know what? It is me. Yeah.
It is me.
That is me.
I guess it depends on the mood, though, because my wife, there have been times where, like, I've been with my wife and I have, like, a quick conversation somewhere and she's like, who is that? No idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how the mood hits you. Most of the time, I'll just be like, I don't know.
I'm sorry. I don't know you. But you seem to know me.
No clue. Sorry, I'm terrible with names. Well, you know the great Bill Shonley.
Yeah.
What his go-to is, guy.
Mm-hmm. I've heard many stories about people meeting Bill Shonley and then really a short time later seeing him again and he just didn't know. Which is fine. It's, you know.
You think about, he's the mayor.
Yeah.
He's the mayor of Rip City.
Yeah.
The guy meets thousands of people. He's met millions of people over his lifetime. He doesn't care.
I can't remember what it was.
I love it too, but here's the thing about him. He may not remember you, but he never makes you feel like he won't remember you the next time. Like you always feel like this time's going to be the time.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's like, I get it. I don't have a relationship with him. I just met him and I'm just like, I'll have a brief conversation with him. He's a friggin' awesome guy though. I love the Shawns. Don't you dare give a butt.
No. I was going to say that I remember Suk had talked about that once too, that it was either he had met Shawns or he met like Clyde Drexler or maybe it was Terry Porter or something where like he had met him over and over again, like four times. And every time Suk saw him, he would just keep reintroducing himself until the third time the guy was like, yeah, Jason, I know it's you. Like you don't have to keep introducing yourself. It's like, well, look, you're big time.
Yeah, that's always awkward, though, when you introduce yourself to somebody and they're like, yeah, I know. Like, I met you before.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
But I'll also do the technique, too, where I will just immediately, like, I get a good sixth sense for if people don't remember me. Mm-hmm. And I'll just, right off the bat, once I say hi, I'll just say, hey, it's Will. Remember we met at blank, blah, blank, blank. Yeah. And that gives them the go-ahead to be like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, sure you did. Okay, let's just keep talking.
That's a polite thing to do, Will.
Yeah, just, you know, hey, it's me. We met here this time. Remember that?
Yeah. And then they're like, I've never been to Firefest.
Like, sir, this is a Wendy's. You order food here.
Hey, let's talk sports. Your guesses as to where AJ is. 503-250-1080. Maybe we'll call her today. What are you doing? Where you at?
She sounded like when she teased it, she's going to be on a plane or something.
Yeah.
Like out of a hangar or something.
All right.
Parachute.
Maybe. All right. Maybe we'll get to that too. Hey, but where we got to start? Okay. We got to talk about, this is the scariest part of the Blazers funk right now. And don't try to tell me it's not a funk. AJ and Dusty on the Fan. Hmm. Blazers lose again to a team over 500. This time, they fell victims to the Boston Celtics. Yeah, that's not good. No. Not good at all. 116 to 115. Now, should be noted, Boston is playing really good basketball of late. They've won six of their last seven, including last night's game. Their one loss is to the Philadelphia 76ers, which is the best team in the Eastern Conference, right meow, in that span. They're playing at the right time. They're starting to click. Bad news for Portland. They're now 9-16. 9-16 against teams with winning records. You know what that puts them in? New York Knicks territory.
Oh. Whoa. I've heard like all the stats of where they compare it and everything, but once you said the New York Knicks, like,
doesn't that make it sound worse?
That one hit me, dude. That got the jump on me right there. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're with the Knicks at this point.
Yeah. The Knicks record against teams that are 500 and better is 9-18.
And you know what's even sadder about that is the Knicks are playing well right now. Like, they're on the upside. I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to do much in the playoffs, but like, RJ Barrett's playing a lot better since he got challenged by Anthony Edwards in that post game. Anthony Edwards was basically like, yeah, RJ Barrett can't close games out. And then he's been going on these scoring tears lately. So it's like, yeah, we're compared with the Knicks, but the Knicks are actually like having an upside moment.
Yeah. And if you put the Blazers and the Knicks together, you got one hell of a basketball team. Like, one team can score and not stop anybody. The other team can stop everybody and not score.
Yeah, if you could, like, splice Terry Stotts and Tom Thibodeau together.
Ew. And you got Brad Stevens.
Barf. I don't think so.
You don't like
so.
Brad Stevens?
I wouldn't look like Brad Stevens. No.
Oh, God, no. It wouldn't look like Brad Stevens.
He's balding and
come on,
sweaty.
That's not what we're talking about here. The worst part about the Blazers' funk right now, and look, it is a funk. We talked about this after Terry Stotts said, agree with the premise that it's a funk. It is. I mean, they're not playing well. And the scariest part about this funk is that Damian Lillard is not right. We can have a conversation about, you know, whether it's CJ McCollum who doesn't look right. We can have a conversation about the three-guard lineup as a whole and not being able to defend elite teams that are long, which we saw Jason Tatum pretty good in his length. So like three straight game, 30-point games against the Blazers. First Celtic to do that since Larry Bird.
He is now pretty much averaging 30. I mean, he's like a 0.5 away from averaging 30 in the month of April at this point. And you know what's even crazier about what Tatum's doing is that he's still feeling the after effects of COVID.
Yep.
Like, he has to have a friggin' inhaler before games to, like, just get him out there and get him going. So it's like, you know, yeah, we threw kind of the kitchen sink at Tatum towards the end of the game, but it just seemed like it was one of those moments where it was like he was going to score and he was going to decide when he wanted to. And unfortunately, that happened with like 8 seconds left to seal the game off.
Yeah, and, it, you know, Dame had he still has that Herculean effort at the end where he pulled the trigger on a couple threes and it was just like, whoa, okay, there it is. But he just did, from the jump, he did not look right. And he hasn't looked right. And here's the thing with Portland is that they have no wiggle room. You have a guy who's the ultimate competitor. Where would you sit there and say you arrest Damian Lillard? Because it just looks like the guy needs a couple of days, right? I mean, in all honesty, you see the way he's moving. You see the look on his face, the grimaces in pain. Every game he is on the ground, grimacing in pain. He got hit in the giblets once yesterday and then got bonked in the knee another time. And it was just like, oh boy, you know, every game we're seeing that where it's slower and slower. And it's like we're watching a Rocky movie, right? And we're waiting for Rocky to come back out and just start swinging and knock out the Russian, right? And make that final blow. Well, man, it's looking like it's fewer and further between when those haymakers are going to start landing.
Well, and it's also, there's a key indicator within the past three games. I think he's amounted to like almost 25 assists in the past three games, which is pretty high. I mean, he had 10 assists last night, And that's not to say that that's a bad thing, but it's also an indicator that he's deferring a lot and that he's not trying to take over games. And you can see that on the court. I mean, you could see it last night, too. He was trying a little bit late, but like you were seeing CJ make those crucial shots. You were seeing CJ put them ahead by one point when it was really starting to go down to the wire. And so with Damian Lillard, I don't think there's really a question of resting him at this point because you can't. I mean, you have what?
No, you can't.
Yeah, 18 games left. And a lot of them are going to be against really good teams. And then you're also going to have 3 of 4 games that are against Memphis, which, you know, there's the old adage of you can't beat the same team twice. They'll lose one of those games, possibly 2 if this keeps up.
Yep.
And so you're in this weird position where Damian Lillard in post-game interviews and in his language noticeably sounds deflated.
Yeah.
He sounds like he is not as positive. He sounds like he's not as optimistic about where the team's going. You can see in the words that he's saying that he's putting it out there saying, you know, we played well, we did this. But you can just hear it in the tenor that it's like something's not there anymore.
You know, but the thing to Dame with, you know, the assist, the Blazers actually did something different offensively last night, which is they went away from the pick and roll, which has been their bread and butter. They actually had ball movement and as a team had 31 assists. You know, that was good to see. And remember back in February when they went on that run, you know, his assist numbers were up. I mean, he had like a 16 assist game, 12, 13, you know.
Yeah, and crappy teams.
It was Damian Lillard playing within the context of the offense and teams doing everything they can to take Dame away.
Mm.
And last night you had, you know, CJ McCollum hit the go-ahead shot, you know, but Dame hit the tie, the shot to tie it at 109. He had a couple of big threes. He had a deep three late in the game where you sat there and you said, all right, you know, he's going to be there. I think that you just watch a guy who's tired, and the rest of the NBA knows what we need to do to kind of equalize this Blazers team is take him away. Take the letter O away and you'll survive. And who's making the opponents pay? It's not anybody right now. And it sure as heck, like, look, the 3-guard lineup, one thing, Dame being banged up is another thing. The bench was not good last night.
Yeah, it was.
Dude, because Melo was 20 off the bench,
30 something.
Yeah,
it was 30 points total. Now 25 of that came from Melo.
Yeah,
I think was what Cantor had 9.
With he and his partnership with Cantor, the plus minus was still a minus when they're on the floor together.
And then Anthony Simons didn't even play. That was a coach's decision, I guess.
You got a lot of zeros on the board, and it was. Look, plus minus can be a stat that you just go, oh, whatever, right? But when you look at the numbers of last night and how the game shaped out, the Blazers starters were all in the plus. The bench in its entirety was in the minus last night. And like, look, you don't sit there and overreact to an individual. But when you look at a unit as a whole, that was a problem last night for the Portland Trail Blazers.
This texter saying, I think Terry Stotts is afraid to just sit Dame for multiple games because that highlights his inability to coach.
Yeah, they can't.
I think it also indicates if he did do that, the white flag, which I think a lot of us are kind of seeing at this point. Like, I see it too from Terry Stotts that he sees the writing on the wall and knows that, you know, something different's going to happen in this next season. Whether it's he's on the team and there's a complete roster shuffle up and Neil Olshey's not there or he's behind another bench, something's going to happen.
You know, when you look at those plus minuses, it was ugly for the Blazers bench.
Mm.
Watching Melo hit shots though, when he gets in that rhythm,
I know
it is fun,
dude. Especially he took Peyton Pritchard to the friggin' shed.
Well, yeah.
Oh, that was like, so good.
All of that was missing was like a little boop on the head, like a welcome to the NBA, buddy.
Hey, have you ever heard of a mismatch?
Yeah. I like that.
This is what it is. I'm huge, you're small.
I like that. But, I mean, look, and you mentioned it, like, hey, you got over 30 points off the bench. Also, you know, the other end of the floor matters a heck of a lot in the NBA. And I think that hasn't that been the story of the year for the Portland Trail Blazers? Scoring isn't the problem for Portland. But, you know, we look at it and we go, 116, not bad. 116, not bad.
Really? You thought that?
127, really? 132, 122. Isn't that what we've been living?
Oh, man. That's bad. See, now you're getting to the point of what is it? The what stages of grief?
I think I'm in acceptance.
You're in acceptance now. You're finally kind of like, hey, 116. Okay. We lost the game, but we held them to a respectable number.
This came from, you know, last week. I even said it yesterday, which was, you know, can you be realistic and optimistic at the same time? Like, I'm under no impression that it's going to change. I just want to watch. I want to be entertained, right? I want to be entertained. And watching those games, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It was a good game in that regard. It was
good down the stretch. It's good down the stretch.
All right. The latest slam against Justin Fields is quite a doozy. Here's Will. All right, some of your thoughts on the fan text line, 503-250-1080. Then we'll get into a little college foosball stuff. The text that you read that said, you know, I think Terry Stotts is afraid to just sit Dame for multiple games because that will highlight his inability to coach rather than have a superstar carry him. You know, man, I don't think that it's Stotts wanting to rest Dame, although I don't think you would want to in a million years. I think the hardest part is going to get Damian Lillard to sit out games right now, because there is a known that if you cannot make this push without him, and that way it doesn't matter who you're playing with the way the team is right now, you need him on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, sure. I mean, I hate to ask this, but like, I mean, do you?
Yeah.
You're not winning games. You're beating teams that I would like to remind everyone too. Didn't we beat the 76ers without Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and Yusuf Nurkic starting Ronnie Hood at point guard?
Hold on.
And I know that's an anomaly and everything, but at the same time, like when you say things like, we need him on the floor to win games, I just think about it and I'm like,
the Blazers do.
Yeah, but like,
me personally, I do not.
Oh, you need him. You need more of him. But it's like, we're not winning games already. And I guess that's where a lot of the frustration for me comes in, is that like people keep hammering over and over and over and over again about like, fire Terry Stotts, get rid of Terry Stotts.
Are you talking about the Philly game, by the way?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. When they beat Philly without Dame, CJ, or Nurk.
Yeah. And you had Rodney Hood as your point.
And I think, didn't Joel Embiid, he played, but then left the game for a little bit. But
he put up something like 30, 40 points.
Yeah.
But like,
no Ben Simmons in that game.
People hammer over and over and over again about getting rid of Terry Stotts as the ultimate solution. But I just feel like if you look at this team as a whole, as the roster itself, how they're constructed, how their offensive philosophy basically just goes crapping in the face of whatever defense you might play on the floor, it's just all at this point flawed and played out. Sure. And it's not something where I say it is, man, it's played out. I mean, Terry Stotts is not a bad coach. He's an incredibly good coach that has taken this team to how many playoff appearances in a row? Seven, eight. It's just that this whole thing has completely played out as an old story. Like, NBA teams have clocked how to stop this team. They have clocked how to basically, put Damian Lillard down in the court, right? You just double him right once he passes half court. He gives it to somebody else. And then maybe 35% of the time that other person will make the shot.
You know,
you'll live with those odds.
This text says, you know, it's more an O'Shea. This team is not constructed right. I say that a lot. I've said it's, you know, you've got one part coaching is, sure, you can go ahead and point the finger there, but it is roster construction too. I mean, you do have a roster construction issue.
Yeah.
In a league where, you know, 3-and-D, everybody wants length, right? Everybody wants length. You're starting three guys under, or 6-3 and under, right?
Robert Covington was supposed to solve this. You know what I mean?
Right. But he is your undersized power forward.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that doesn't, you know, Robert Covington solved a problem of a 3-and-D guy, but now you are just small across the board.
Yeah.
And look, that the unfortunate thing for Terry Stotts in this situation is that, you know, the president of basketball ops is Neil O'Shea, and he's the guy
who is in charge. I really do, and we've had this conversation before, but I truth serum to see how Jody Allen and or Burt Cold feel about this would be fascinating to me. And we never hear from the ownership and how they
bifurcate.
Feel. Yeah, we do got to bifurcate those two things. Ownership and the roster.
Well,
but there's
Jason,
there's a lot of issues.
Jason Quick has alluded to the point that basically, Jody Allen is a bottom line oriented businesswoman. She is somebody that needs to see results. And if there isn't something that's tangible that she can point at and go, well, that's doing well. She says, well, there's a problem and something needs to change. You know, that's what I think is so interesting, too, about the difference in ownership in the NBA. And this is coming up a lot more, especially because of the fact that Alex Rodriguez looks like he's zeroing in on owning the old T-Wolves, is that you have kind of a mix of people that on one side of the spectrum, you have someone like Mark Cuban, who just basically pours everything into culture and feel. It's like, how's this team feel? Who's their leader? How do I feel like they're going to be able to make, X, Y, and Z happen? And am I enjoying it? And do I feel like I'm part of the process? And then you have people who are strictly just all business, who just want to see something happen. And if they don't, who's the group that owns the Nets? Those two dudes?
No idea.
Well,
Jay-Z. Beyonce.
It's not Beyonce. Wait, I don't think that Jay-Z owns part of the Nets anymore. Or maybe he does.
It'll always be Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Well, those two bros basically trusted analytics and they trusted like numbers oriented things. And so they tried to do the long haul process and then they got fed up with it and were like, all right, we're just going to go way over the tax and go get KD and James Harden and Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge and who cares?
Yeah, because it works.
It's working.
Joseph Tsai.
That's it. Yeah, so it's just, you don't really exactly know what Jody Allen is thinking in terms of her complete goals. The only kind of nugget we've gotten from it is the fact that she's aware of what's going on and she knows it's a problem. Yep. So how do you solve it?
503-250-1080. That'd be the fan text line. We'll have more of your Blazer thoughts on this as the show goes on, including, that backup point guard was really good last night. That coming up next hour. But coming up next, hey, we might have the NCAA actually doing something. Amazing. Next on The Fan. Hey, widely being reported right now that the NCAA is going to make a move that actually makes sense. They are expected to approve a wide sweeping one-time transfer rule for all sports across the NCAA. So, in case you didn't know, there's a handful of sports in which you cannot transfer and be immediately eligible.
Five. Count them. Five.
Count them off for me. They are. Can I guess them?
Sure.
Football.
Right.
Men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball. And is lacrosse the other one? Is it lacrosse?
No. You know what?
No, it's not.
No, that's wrong. Because I read in that same article that it's allowed in lacrosse. But for some reason, lacrosse culture doesn't like. They don't do it. It's like a gentleman's agreement thing.
Oh.
Like they're just more morally responsible, I guess. I don't know. Either that or they're really good at hiding it. Hmm. It's really odd. Yeah. But I forgot the last one.
They don't transfer or they don't?
No, they just don't do the whole like, hey, behind the scenes, nudge, nudge. I think I want to go to this school.
What is
nudge, nudge. Sounds good. I mean, come on. It's like the pay for players and it's the whole idea that like, Jalen Hurts went to Oklahoma and definitely didn't talk to Lincoln Riley before going there and definitely didn't talk to anybody on the coaching staff while he was still at Alabama or definitely
well,
didn't
you can.
Get recruited
that's what,
there.
That's what the portal is for. You can seek transfer and go and talk to other coaches.
But I mean, even just before that.
Oh,
I mean, this
before
is where
he entered the portal,
because there's another part to this whole thing that I think is supposed to eliminate the dead period. That's supposed to make it like this is just going to be let's open up the carnival all year. Like you can literally just keep talking to recruits in and out like all year and just constantly be recruiting people.
Yeah. What's wrong with that? Saves a lot of schools from those stupid recruiting violations where it's like
580 impermissible text messages. Who cares?
Well, I think because there are other teams.
You don't think those texts aren't happening on burner phones?
I know. But, you know, the rules are in place because there's other teams that have more resources and that they could use those resources to basically just suffocate smaller schools.
Yes. Well, spoiler alert, they do that regardless of those antiquated rules, because like that is at a, like these rules were all made, by the way, at a time where like text messaging wasn't something that was available. It wasn't around. It didn't exist. Right. So it's like you're making phone calls from your office phone instead of a cell phone, where like these coaches will be calling guys from a golf course, or, you know, if you're Mario Cristobal from like the squat rack, I don't know what the hell he's doing, but these you're literally able to call and text guys from anywhere at any time. And any coach at any level can do that.
Well, and you know, something I noticed the difference from just talking to Nemec to having my own experience of getting recruited in the late 2000s, which, you know, if you got a text message from a coach, dude, that thing was a story. Like, it was a friggin' narrative. Like, he would write, like, what's going on with the university, what's going on with coach, what head coach thinks about, you know, how you're doing, what we saw on tape. And like, you would just be scrolling, reading this thing. Nemec says that now a lot of these recruits, like the coaches are just keeping in contact, like, hey, what's up? How was school? Like, they're just like little communiques with these players to make them more of relatable figures in their life. Because a lot of these coaches don't want you to perceive them, or at least the recruiting coaches don't want you to perceive them as, in fact, coach. But hey, it's your friend here. It's Coach Will. I'm just trying to get you to come over here and play at Oregon State.
And that's the thing, is like recruiting has changed since these rules were put into place. Like, in what you're saying, it's a different world that we're living in as far as recruiting goes. And so the dead period, the people that I feel for are not the players or the coaches from small programs, you know, where you can't keep up with mighty Alabama or mighty Oregon. Guess what? Portland State didn't recruit the same guy anyway.
How do you
Unless,
know?
Actually, it was the deep snapper.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a five-star deep snapper that had Portland State, and he ended up committing to Alabama, but Portland State was in his top five, so they were recruiting the same guy.
I gotta imagine, but if you're a long snapper, like, you don't have an incredible passion for football. You just know you're really good at that thing, and you can go to whatever school you want.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
Boy, I sure love snapping this ball, and that's it.
And running down the field unmolested.
That's right.
That made me feel uncomfortable.
I mean, think about that, though. Like, as a long snapper, like, do you really enjoy what you're doing? You just know you're really good at it. That's it. Because you do it at tops 10 times a game, and that's a lot.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really care.
So it's like, I'm just saying, if I was a long snapper, like, I wouldn't really care to go to Alabama. I would want to go to like a college that.
Oh no, I'd go to Alabama.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah, for sure. You're going to win. You're king of the campus, even if you're a long snapper. Are you kidding me?
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, you are. You get free drinks everywhere, because guess what? You play football for Alabama? Hell yeah, brother.
Way to snap that ball.
Oh, man, you see that? That punter has never had a quicker stopwatch. From the snap to the foot, it is gone.
Do it with the keg.
Just snap the keg.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, no. No, you're still king. You go to, like, Hawaii. Yeah, you're going to school at Hawaii.
Hell yeah,
deep
snap
there, but nobody cares.
I don't need anybody to care. I'm hanging out in Hawaii for 4 years.
See, because you don't have the passion.
Five if they redshirt me.
That's right. Anyways, the people that I feel bad for aren't the small programs. It's the coaches, because having a dead period tells the coaches, like, you actually can go and take a break, and you can take a vacation, and your life 24/7, 365 is not committed to recruiting teenage boys. You can live a life, and that is gone. Like, and that's where I think, if there was any pushback from the NCAA, that would make sense, because recruiting, make no mistake, it still is a year-round thing. Mm. But the dead period does serve that purpose, which is they can focus on something else.
I think some of those dudes, though, are like addicted to it.
Most of them are.
Yeah, I mean, the famous story of Urban Meyer when he beat Oregon in the national title. I think it was like, what was that, 13 or 14? When they beat Oregon, was that like he got the trophy and that as the ceremony was getting set up, like the stage was getting put together and everything, like he ran into the locker room and got on his phone and started calling recruits. And like his wife was talking about that, saying like that was a really huge low moment because she realized like he was absolutely obsessed and running himself, you know, to death.
Well, yeah, because, you know, like you think of all the dumb things that happen in the recruiting process, like sending a kid 500 letters in a week. Ugh. Getting a call from the coach immediately after he wins a national title. Yeah, that's actually something.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's just
but that, it goes back to that singular focus where it's like, oh, boy.
Yeah. And I mean, it's shown itself to be that way with Meyer. I mean, I know he's coaching in the NFL, but I think that he took this job with the Jaguars. Probably, I mean, obviously for many reasons, but I think a huge one was his wife looked at it, was like, you don't have to recruit. Okay. If you want to coach, that's what you'll do.
And the funny part about it is that his one complaint about free agency is that he doesn't get to treat it like college and he doesn't get to recruit guys the same way. Well, the NCAA, hey, they're doing the right thing. They're going to allow one-time transfers so kids can say, hey, I want to give myself a better opportunity, and they don't have to sit out a year for it in the five sports that they weren't allowing them to in the first place, which is ridiculous. So good on you, NCAA. All right. Hey, what does the training wheels off mean for the Oregon offense? Travis Dye said that. We'll talk about it. Sounds exciting. Next, AJ and Dusty on the Odyssey app.